CIA, along with the NSA, thinks it's in the national security interest, and it is patriotic and fully moral and acceptable, for it to spy on the emails of every American, to track every click you make on the Internet, to inspect any email you've ever written, to examine your text. In fact, at this point, the FBI has its own Air Force. Thousands of airplanes crisscrossing the United States, all to spy on Americans' private communication. And yet, when WikiLeaks publishes the private correspondence on a private email of the CIA director Brenner, oh my God, according to him, it's a malicious crime. God, don't these guys have mirrors? Do you think that in Washington, where the Washington, D.C. area, where all of these politician scumbags live, that they don't install mirrors in their homes? They can't look in the mirror and say, oh my God, I don't like this. I don't like having my private communication examined. That's not fair. It's not fair to my family. It's a malicious crime. And yet that's what they're doing to every American. They don't see their hypocrisy. Speaking of hypocrisy, by the way, this is Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who are capable and of the recognition or have come all the way to the realization that every religious, political, economic, media, and military institution is corrupt and counterproductive. I'm your host, Yetta. You've got Scott on the switchboard. If you'll call in toll-free, 877-376-45. Speaking of hypocrisy, the Obaminator gave this glorious speech in front of the United Nations just a couple of weeks ago, chastising Putin, saying, you know, that those who lead with force and those who abandon diplomacy will find themselves on the scrap heap of history. And so as the Obaminator wanted to bomb Damascus, came up with this grand plan to kill Assad, which doesn't sound much like diplomacy to me, Russia invites him to Moscow for talks. Now, one, talking, strikes me as diplomacy. Two, America's bombing in Syria and overt statements that Assad must go, and you know how we got rid of Saddam Hussein, don't you? Now, and we got rid of Muammar Gaddafi. We made sure they were killed. Do you think maybe the Obaminator has a mirror in the White House? Do you think he took all the mirrors out of the White House? He can't see himself as a complete fraud? Nor any of those that are speaking for him when they came out today and were just tongue-wagging, assailing Russia for the horrendous act of actually talking to a head of state and trying to maintain his position in power as opposed to bomb his country into oblivion. Now, when you look at what's happened as a result of America's choices and tens of millions of refugees and close to a million dead between Iraq and Syria and all-out civil war in these countries as well as total chaos in Libya, who do you think's right? Who do you think's got a clue? And who's absolutely wrong. Speaking of wrong, this is the story that one of many that I wanted to cover. I'm just going to share it with you and make some comments along the way. It begins, the accepted story in the United States of what's happened in Syria is just that, a story. Told to make a narrative make sense of something completely misunderstood. Let me read that to you again. The accepted story in the United States of what's happened in Syria is just that. It's a story. Told to make the narrative of something, sense of a narrative, completely ununderstood. That's the nature of it. Our military, our State Department, the White House, Congress, the media, et al., has universally lied about what has caused the conflict in Syria, the cause and consequence of Syria. All to make the United States look like we're doing the right thing when we're the cause of the problem. In southern Sweden, this is an artist and an author that wants to make a comparison between the make-believe of the U.S. government and make-believe in his own country. He says in southern Sweden, a giant rock lies in the middle of some flat farmland. And a lovely story my ancestors used to tell to explain how it got there came down to this. A troll threw it there as evidence. In a nearby castle, one can find a horn and a pipe that come into the story. The horn contained what is today would be called chemical weapons, which burned the back of a horse when the hero of the story was smart enough to dump it over his shoulder rather than drinking it. Man and horse got away by riding across the furrows of a field because everyone knows that trolls must run back and forth in full lengths of each furrow, which slows them down tremendously. The facts all fit. Some fringe conspiracy theories may question the very existence of trolls, but such arguments need not be taken seriously. A peace activist recently sent a video link with a note stating that this video got the Syrian story pretty much right. I listened to it. It was pretty much wrong, but it was a lot closer to right than the narrative that's coming out of Washington. This author said, I had a number of objections. This did I when I listened to it. I won't share that with you. That the United States got involved in Syria in 2006 is revealed in WikiLeaks that the Pentagon was intent on overthrowing the Syrian government in 2001 is revealed by Donald Rumsfeld's memo shown to Wesley Clark and by Tony Blair in 2010. So the story is this video of the U.S. taking an interest purely of humanitarian nature. Only in 2013 is a lie. It's akin to trolls in the field. That misdirection also facilitates leaving out the story the U.S. brushed aside of the peace process that was proposed by Russia in 2012. The statement presented as fact was that Assad used chemical weapons in an attack in 2013. And yet that statement, and I listened to the Obamanator make it just yesterday, just to make sure that he in fact did accuse Assad of it and said that because of it, it was in America's national interest to take Assad out and to begin a bombing campaign of Syria, which would have started World War III. We would have already been in World War III had he done what he said he was going to do. And this author realizes, as does now everyone who's investigated that chemical attack, that it was outrageous. That America doesn't have a shred of evidence to demonstrate that it was Assad that did it. As a matter of fact, the Russian investigation and all independent investigations demonstrate that it was not Assad, but instead fundamentalist Islamic jihadists linked to al-Nusra. What ought to have been said was that someone used chemical weapons and Obama claimed falsely to have incontrovertible evidence that it was Assad. That's what should have been said. That's what we said on this program. That is not what was conveyed in the traditional media. Quoting Obama in a 2013 proposal for a targeted military strike blatantly avoids Seymour Hersh's report of a massive bombing campaign that Obama had planned. And he wanted to go out as being the American who was willing to hit hard. And he wanted to level Damascus. quoting Obama on a 2013 proposal for the targeted military strike, is today recognized as a lie. The video's conclusion is that because the war is complicated, there is therefore no end in sight. Well, this war is not complicated. This war is actually very simple to understand. But what is unique about this war is that typically in American history, Americans have formed allegiances with really evil individuals on a Machiavellian basis. It's a blend of Sun Tzu and Machiavelli, where in the Art of War and the Prince, they combine this idea of the ends justifies the means and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's a bankrupt strategy. And typically what America does is that they deploy all manner of immoral, savage proxies to go fight a war in another country, meddling in that country by trying to kill the dictator. And it always backfires, because what happens next after we arm that belligerent to fight a proxy war on our behalf, as we did, for example, with Saddam Hussein, as we did with the Taliban, as we did with Al-Qaeda, as we did with the Islamic State, it comes back to bite us. That those individuals, after prevailing, or even of stalemate, can't be trusted, and now that they're heavily armed, the ally becomes an enemy. But in the case of Syria, we're doing it simultaneously. We claim that Iran is a foe to be reckoned with, to be kept from having nuclear weapons, and yet we provide a military for Iran in Iraq, where Iranian generals control that military with all of its American weapons. We claim that we are in league with Sunni Islam and Saudi Arabia and Turkey et al., and yet we are bombing the Islamic State. And yet just a matter of a year ago, through the Awakening program, we were providing the Islamic State with their weapons. We recognize that Turkey is at war with the Kurds, and yet we're weaponizing the Kurds. The Kurds are our ally, as is Turkey, and yet they're at war with each other. And how does that pit the U.S. and Russia? Yes, so Russia is in opposition to the Islamic jihadists and is bombing them, but doing so on behalf of Assad. America is bombing and is against those same Islamic jihadists, but is doing so recognizing that they want Assad dead. Now, the American strategy is schizophrenic. Now, the Russian strategy will also fail, but at least it's sane. But the overall war in Syria is really easy to understand, and people shouldn't be confused about it. America invaded Iraq and removed the Islamic world's best dictator, and not recognizing that in Islam, secular dictators are by far the best form of governance. That if you give the people the right to vote, they're so illiterate, they're so stooped in their religion, that they will believe the imam when the imam tells them that you either vote for the candidate that the religious elite have chosen, or that Allah will see to it that your britches are burned forever in hell. And the Islamic hell is nothing to snivel at. It's full-on torture, with Allah himself manning the torture. And the tortures are all explained in the Quran. I mean, it's boiling pitch poured down your throat. It's having your skin flailed off, pulled off while you're alive, only to have it put back on so that Allah can pull it off again. That's the kind of tortures. Women are, as we've said on this, according to Muhammad, are hung by their breasts from meat hooks. So hell is, you know, something you'd want to avoid, and that's what they say. And so they simply check the banana or the grapefruit that is the assigned to the most loyal Islamic leader. So America gave Iraq to Iran. And Iran, of course, hates the United States, so that was really pretty stupid. Then we built a military for Iraq that is controlled by Iran. And since now you had a religious order over Iraq as opposed to a political order over Iraq, the religious regime, now with America's military, decided to act religiously with it, and in Islam, to act religiously is to kill. So they began to murder Sunni civilians. And so America, recognizing that we had started a civil war in Iraq with our stupidity, decided, well, the best way to resolve conflict is more weapons. So we created the Awakening Program to give weapons to Sunni Muslims and to the warlords over them so they could counteract the sting of the American weapons being used against them. Well, it worked great because that became the Islamic State. Then, as the Islamic State was emerging, along with al-Nusra, America decided, you know, this is our opportunity to create a civil war between Sunnis and Shias, and that will ultimately topple the Assad regime, which we wanted to topple. All we have to do is spread rumors that one another has bombed each other's mosque, and we'll lie about who's doing what to whom. We'll actually set up and do the dirty deed, blame it on the other. Muslims are prone to believe lies, no matter how big they are. And we'll throw in, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll bomb Libya, and in the process of bombing Libya through Qatar, we'll provide billions of dollars worth of sophisticated weapons, and then in that chaos, those weapons will all funnel into Syria, and just think of the fun we can have. Assad's a goner for sure. And so the civil war that began by having the American-backed Shiite government in Iraq kill its own citizens, the Sunnis, and then having American weapons deployed to protect Sunnis through the Islamic State in Iraq, boiled over into a full-fledged civil war in Iraq that became a full-fledged civil war in Syria. And that's the war that America started. Now, I had previously said that it was a consequence of our stupidity that caused this war. But no, the WikiLeaks documents, and that's what this article is about, demonstrate that it was not an act of stupidity, but maliciousness. We did it on purpose. And to have that become known for fact, I mean, the cable, the document that is circulated now from the U.S. intelligence community, CCing all of the parties, the State Department, the Department of Defense, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, the White House, you name it. It lays out this whole plan, and it doesn't lay it out in a diplomatic speak. It doesn't lay it out in intelligence speak. It lays it out in plain English, saying exactly what we were going to do. It's exactly what we did. 1 million people are dead as a result. 20 million are refugees. The world has been put upside down. And we're about to start World War III with Russia over it, even though we're the cause of this melee. To say that the global policeman of humanitarian intent is no more real than a troll would be an accurate statement according to this article. What do you think? Glenn, is there any credibility to the United States activities in Libya? In Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Egypt, in Syria, in the Ukraine? Can you find a shred of credibility, a shred of moral decency in any of those places?
No, we've behaved wickedly, reprehensibly, duplicitously. There's just no way. It's indefensible, you know.
Yes.
And I think that Russia's actions are, it's really politically, I know you're saying they won't succeed militarily in the long run, but like you said, at least their actions are sane, and they're giving the lie to, you know, all of this, you know, which is great.
Yeah, you and I are in complete agreement on the first part of, the second part of this, that Putin's actions are sane, and the United States actions are insane. It's insane to be trying to overthrow Assad and to be providing weapons to Syrian rebels in the hopes of overturning Assad. That's insane. It's sane to try to protect the Assad regime, even though it's not moral to do so because it's an immoral regime, but it's at least sane to do so. It's just that it's doomed to failure. No traditional army can beat a religious terrorist organization.
Now, on the topic of, you know, World War III, mm-hmm. Pardon the background song, can't really do much about that.
Yeah.
I really don't think we're going to see any sort of superpower, peer-to-peer, you know, multi-megaton nuclear weapon type World War III. I think mutually assured destruction, believe it or not, like, still holds with that. I think, you know, as naval warfare is obsolete. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing, and I've said this before, the one thing that I mm-hmm. really, you know, hang my hat on, that I really see being huge is the reference to Tarshish and the young lions thereof in Ezekiel 38-39, mm-hmm. You know, relative to the Magog War. Because
mm-hmm.
I interpret Tarshish as what we would call the English-speaking world.
Mm-hmm.
And we see them sort of neutered, emasculated, sitting on the sidelines, inquiring about what's happening and what the motives for the aggressors are, but mm-hmm. not directly taking them on. So, I, you know, it just seems to me in the next 10 or 11 years, we're, you know, I think our own folly, you know, will sufficiently undo us. Well, you know, mm-hmm. these sorts of political and economic stuff. But I see, I don't think it's going to take a third world war to do all that.
Yeah, you know, each of the things you've mentioned are interesting. How do you fight World War III? I mean, clearly, Iowa tells us there's going to be a World War III and a World War IV. And they're going to be fought in quick succession, and that more than half of the world's population is going to die in them. And he gives us a lot of very specifics. And he does ultimately say that elements are going to melt with intense heat.
So we
are going to have a nuclear aspect of it, but doesn't mean that the nuclear aspect of it is part of the initial salvo. And he actually talks about millions of Muslims flooding into Israel, and he speaks of Damascus being a twisted heap of ruins. That would not happen with a nuclear exchange. So his descriptions seem to describe what we're witnessing now, which is a lot of proxies, a lot of lower tech weapons, you know, anti-tank weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, 50 caliber machine guns, mines, crude bombs being dropped from aircraft, and you know, a number of other kinds of cruise missiles, all that kind of stuff that would be, you know, just, and you get a lot of people fighting on the ground. No one's wearing a uniform. You can't tell the good guys and the bad guys. A lot of casualties, a lot of destruction, a lot of expense, a lot of noise, a lot of refugees. That's kind of how he's describing it, because what you've said is true, but you know, it goes further than that, Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way to have...
I meant to specify my time frame. I should have meant, like, I don't mean to see that happening within the next couple of years.
Yeah, oh, I agree with you. Okay, no, I agree with you entirely. Now, I do see us becoming more engulfed in world war, but not all-out world war until, you know, maybe 2027 is when we're in all-out world war. But
exactly.
Yeah, the skirmishes, it's interesting to think of what war will look like, because there is no possibility of having naval battles like we had in World War II.
No.
There's none. I mean, our Navy is so obsolete, it's ridiculous. The only thing we could use our Navy for is mutually assured destruction if we unleashed the boomers. But our battle groups for World War are completely useless. Our battle groups are only useful now for projecting a force, and what we found is every time we project a force using our battle groups to fly our aircraft off aircraft carriers to do, you know, to bomb an Islamic country, that it's counterproductive. So the only usefulness of our Navy now is counterproductive, and there cannot be and will not be a traditional naval war. The aircraft carriers will be destroyed. There is no chance of sneaking up on them. You know, all the kind of stuff that happened, the Battle of the Coral Sea, and that, never going to happen again. So you're not going to have a naval war. the navies are obsolete. You're going to have fighters that engage, you know, in this great fighter war. Are there some skirmishes? Sure. But in terms of massive play of fighters and that sort of thing, and like we had, you know, the air forces, they were accompanied by the fighters, they were intercepted by enemy fighters and that kind of stuff. That's never going to happen. That is an obsolete strategy. So that's not going to happen.
Right.
And then you can't, you know, we played tank in Desert Storm. What a waste. The tanks were a complete waste. We even gave the tools for the A1 Abrams to Egypt because we knew, okay, tanks are obsolete. The replacement for the A1 Abrams, we scuttled. I mean, tanks are completely obsolete. We're not going to do that. So then you think, okay, what about this new kind of aerial close-in war where you've got the Apaches and the Cobras and we just scuttled the replacement for the Apache. There is no replacement for the Cobra. And we've come to realize that helicopters are stunningly vulnerable.
Right.
So we're not going to do that. And, you know, we've essentially mothballed the A-10, which was our attack close-in attack airplane, because we killed more Americans with it than we did anything else. So that's not so good.
Yeah. And on the naval front, the Ronald Reagan was taken out by Fukushima. We only have a few carrier squadrons at sea at any one time now. And
yeah.
Obama has caused such a brain drain by getting rid of constitutionalist officers.
Well, we have 10. I think we have 13 that are considered active. We have 10 that are at sea at any one time. And we're building two more. And there's not, and everyone in the Navy knows that they're a dinosaur. They can't get rid of them because, you know, what are they going to do for a job? But, they're a dinosaur. Now, so you can't have, and you're never going to have again, a all-out infantry war.
Right.
So you're not going to have an infantry war. You're not going to have a tank war. You're not going to have a close-in aircraft war. You're not going to have a long-range bomber war. You're not going to have a fighter war. You're not going to have a naval war. What in the hell are you going to do? And you can't even envision a nuclear contest because of those that die. And you know, World War I chemical warfare is prohibited. So how does World War III play out?
Well, possibly some things like, you know, the smaller attack nukes, especially neutron attack nukes, stuff like that. Or
I don't see that.
Possibly deniable chemical or biological warfare.
Well, I see a little bit of that, but what I think it plays out like? I think we're witnessing it.
Like what we're seeing,
no,
what
I just
we're seeing
I, yeah, I just think what we're witnessing. The only difference is that. That rather than just isolated into where the Muslims are actively acting like terrorists throughout all of Northern Africa, Central Africa, Eastern Africa, throughout Turkey and Egypt and Israel now and Syria and Iraq and Iran and Yemen et al. And Afghanistan and Pakistan. What I see is that the Muslims will be less at each other's throat and more galvanized at expanding their base of terror and hatred. And that they're going to involve Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and the Emirates, and they're going to involve Turkey more aggressively, and they're going to involve Egypt and Jordan and Lebanon, and that collectively Muslims from Africa and the Middle East are going to merge as a more unified fighting force. But their primary tactics is going to be the weapon systems that America has given them. Anti-aircraft, anti-tank, anti-personnel, 50-caliber machine guns.
A slow, grinding process.
Massive casualties. And because it's going to be so personal, you're going to see millions of women raped, millions of little girls kidnapped and turned into sex slaves, millions of little boys sodomized. You're going to see lots and lots, millions of people whose heads are going to be cut off and put on stakes. It's going to be gruesome. That's what I think.
Right, and then you'll have the Genesis 6 scenario of the entire world being filled with violence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be, you know, so it's funny, our high-tech notions of you know, megaton thermonuclear weapons that we would dangle over our heads all our lives fall by the wayside as more of this, you know, man-on-man, person-on-person violence actually becomes more of the order of the day.
Yeah. There is, by the way, a real question as whether our nukes even work anymore. You know, the tritium triggers that we were producing, we shut down the factory. The new factory has not come online to produce it. Tritium has a very short half-life, and there's a real question about whether our nukes work now.
The liquid fuel titans are all useless. The solid-fueled Minutemen are, you know, their defendability is now questionable as well.
Right. Yeah. We have also, there's no reason for us to update it, and what we have is unreliable now and obsolete, so it's a mess. But, you know, I do think that what we're witnessing in Syria and Iraq and Libya is an example of what we're going to see. The only other thing that I would add to that is that this migration of tens of millions of Muslims who are acting belligerently, many of them burning down their refugee camps, you know, they're just acting like Muslims, that they're going to act ever more like Muslims once they're in those countries, and those countries don't bend their laws to accommodate Sharia. And what you're going to see is this chaos will not be limited to Islamic countries, but because of the migration, all countries, at least as early as 2001. The United States had the Syrian government on a list of governments it had targeted for overthrow. Why is that something that we ought to be doing? You know, we were always blaming the Soviets for manipulating governments. And yet we had governments all around the world that, through our CIA, we thought that the hell with what the people want, the hell with what they're doing. We, as Americans, have the right to do whatever we want, including killing the leader of a country. And in 2001, the United States decided that the Syrian government had to be overthrown. In 2003, the United States threw the Middle East into a whole new sort of turmoil with this invasion of Iraq. Yeah, that started it all. We gave Iraq to Iran, empowered Shia Islam to the point now we have a Shia-Sunni war. It created sectarian divisions, and it fueled and armed and facilitated the organization of violent groups. Well, yeah. It created the catalyst for the Islamic State, al-Nusra. Without our invasion, neither of those exist. And then they were armed in turn because of the amount of weapons initially we gave to the terrorist groups in Libya. As early as 2006, the United States had people in Syria working for the overthrow of the government. And part of their plan was to pit Sunni against Shia. Part of their plan was to create a series of incidents that they would exaggerate and blame on one religious sect or the other to inspire them to march off to war like we did with the sinking of the Lusitania, like America did with the sinking of the Maine, like America did with the Gulf of Tonkin incident, like America has done with the smoking gun of yellow cake uranium in Iraq. Spread a lie, use the lie to justify war, and once everyone's galvanized around war, it doesn't matter if people later on figure out that it was just a lie, you're already got the patriotic fervor going. But think of how many people have died as a result of those lies. The U.S. response to the Arab Spring and to the U.S.-led overthrow of the Libyan government made matters worse. The Islamic State was developing long before it bust onto the scene and into the news, its leaders organizing in camps in Iraq. You know, what this author does not know, but I've shared with you on this program, the Islamic State is comprised of those who were part of the awakening program. We created them, we armed them, we supplied them with their money. We united them together. And we gave them a reason to exist, which was to defend themselves against the Iraqi military that was wielding American weapons to kill them in their homes. The region was heavily armed, this article said, with weapons from outside the region, primarily from the United States. Three-quarters of the weapons shipped into the Middle East are from the United States. The weapons of the U.S. military itself and of its allies, such as Saudi Arabia and Iraq, were intentionally supplied to these jihadist groups. We did it on purpose. We turned what we created as a political uprising with our CIA into a civil war by arming the Sunnis to attack the Shias. Think of that. We did that. We did it deliberately. We did it through our CIA. We did it through the organization of Bremer, who's today saying, well, it was a malicious crime to publish my personal emails. And yet he is unwilling to apologize for deliberately starting a war that has killed 1 million people. It has changed the nature of the world. We've lost our morality. We've lost our moral compass. We've lost our ability to be civil. You know, the U.S. War College study is just so insightful at moments like these, where it said that dishonesty is rampant at all levels of the U.S. military. And dishonesty is rampant because they are incapable of exercising good judgment. They're literally incapable of morality. They're incapable of knowing the difference between right and wrong. We've created a monster. And we've armed that monster with the most powerful weapons in the history of humanity.